All right, here we go. On the first Sunday morning in March in Las Vegas, I'm Brian Feldman, and this is Out of Line. We are here live in the Fox Sports RCG Home Loans powered by Luminate Bank Studio every Sunday morning at 8 on Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM and 1340 AM, Las Vegas flagship of the Vegas Golden Knights and sister station of Raiders Nation Radio and ESPN Radio Las Vegas. The We also include social media director Spencer The Wiz Ostrowski.
Nobody beats the Wiz.
And producer Chris Magnum Chapman, who aside from producing and being a part of many shows at Lotus Broadcasting, Mags also serves as the locker room reporter for the Vegas Golden Knights Radio Network. We are also streaming on the LV Sports Network, and you can watch the show on Facebook Live and Twitch. The page is called Out of Line. That's O-U-T-T-A-L-I-N-E. Follow the show on Instagram and X at Out of Line Fox LV. And since we are live, your calls and questions are welcome. The Fox Sports RCG Home Loans powered by Luminate Bank Studio line is 702-876-1340.
Hi, this is Bubby, and it's time for What's on Tap.
What's on Tap, brought to you by title sponsor, Luminate Bank, powered by RCG Home Loans powered by Luminate Bank. Whether purchasing a new home or refinancing the home you already own, RCG Home Loans powered by Luminate Bank is the company to turn to for all of your home financing needs. To get information or to get any of your questions answered regarding anything mortgage or real estate related, contact the pros at RCG Home Loans powered by Luminate Bank today, and that is at 702-964-5720 on tap.
I mean, it's great, of course. You know, you always want to be, by or out, of course, you want to finish as high as you possibly can in the conference. And this is a league that's been well-respected all year. And we've cemented our place in kind of, I guess, those five spots. But I think this group is also looking at just winning the next game, you know, see where it takes us and do what we need to do and get there. But as you know, when conference tournaments roll around, and then postseason, of course, it's about matchups. It's about things that you can take advantage of and get good looks, get stops. So bye, no bye. While it's great to finish in that part of the conference and get the bye, I think guys are certainly more ready to get back in the gym tomorrow to get ready for the next one.
That, of course, running Rebels head coach Kevin Kruger after last night's win over San Jose State at the Thomas and Mack. We will talk about that in a little while. Also, the Vegas Golden Knights, I don't want to say stuck in the mud, but they've lost their last two on the road after starting the road trip pretty successful. We'll talk about that during Nightcap in a few minutes. We'll hear from Luis Rodriguez, who is one of the fifth-year senior starters for the Rebels basketball team in a little while. We'll also be joined in a little while by NFL reporter and NASCAR host for Fox Sports, Shannon Spake, is going to be joining the show, talk about the NASCAR 400, get her thoughts on how Las Vegas presented itself during the Super Bowl. And you don't want to miss fact this, there was a record broken, and there's also a huge milestone hit yesterday in sports. You'll want to stick around for that as well. And, of course, Spencer talking a little bit about the bones and the quarterbacks, the veteran quarterbacks, actually, right now. Where are they going to land? There's three of them. They're prominent, and we'll talk about them as well. And, of course, previewing March Madness, which is right around the corner as we enter March. Once again, that is What Is on Tap. If you are looking to buy a home, refinance the home you currently own, or have any mortgage or real estate related questions, contact the pros at RCG Home Loans powered by Luminate Bank today. 702-964-5720 is the number to call. And guys, we're going to get right into it. Go ahead and hit Nightcap, Spence.
Hockey players, as you know, are warriors. They don't give up. They come to play every game.
It's time for Nightcap, a cup full of the Vegas Golden Knights. From highlights to interviews to special events, the puck starts here.
7-2 last night in Buffalo. Many, many things went wrong for the Vegas Golden Knights, especially in the third period. Dylan Cousins, two shorthanded goals against the Golden Knights, meaning they need to shore up their power play. But seven goals in net, the first thing you immediately comes to mind is, okay, what did the seven goals look like? Some of them were legit. Some of them were flat-out garbage goals that just should not be getting past the goaltender. Logan Thompson between the pipes last night, but I'm not going to put it all on him. You know, they need to play better defensively. Definitely need to play better in the neutral zone. But I will tell you this much also. Thursday night, you saw Aiden Hill. It seemed like he had finally got the cobwebs out. And then again, I mean, he played really well at times in that game, but the game-winning goal that he gave up after they came back against Boston down 3-0, ended up having that game tied 4-4 late in the third. And the goal that Aiden Hill gave up, to me, was inexcusable. I mean, he had clear sight of that goal. It's just one you can't let in. Last night, Logan Thompson put one in his own net. It was going across. I understand, you know, what he was doing, but again, a goaltender just has to be more cognizant of where the puck is, and especially when it's shot in certain directions, how it potentially could bounce. I mean, that's all about being a professional goaltender in the National Hockey League is. And, you know, I'm concerned. I mean, I saw that Jack Eichel is back on the ice. He's practicing. How soon he'll be in the lineup, we don't know. We heard he was going to go on the last road trip. I still don't know whether he did or not. He hasn't played to this point. There's only one game left on that road trip, and that is coming up Tuesday night in Columbus. So it is tomorrow. It's tomorrow night in Columbus, and then Thursday they're back home to play the team that's leading the Pacific Division in the Western Conference, and that's the Vancouver Canucks. They've been on a little bit of a backward spell as well. Last week, it's amazing the Golden Knights were 12 points behind them. They're 11 points behind them today. So, but the Edmonton Oilers still playing really, really good hockey, although the Vegas Golden Knights did beat them. They're playing pretty damn good hockey right now, and they passed up the Vegas Golden Knights. As of today, the Vegas Golden Knights are now third in the Pacific Division, again, 10 points behind Vancouver, and now 1 point behind the Edmonton Oilers. Chris, it's a problem. And the problem is, like I said, I mean, you go through your bumps and bruises. You got guys like Brisson who's scoring goals, another goal for him last night. That looked good. The Vegas Golden Knights got down. But, you know, one of the biggest problems was the beginning of each period. Within the first 3 minutes of each period, Buffalo scored a goal. That can't happen. You can't come out flat to start a period. But when you come back in another game, you tie the game, you're playing good late, and then this game just completely got away from them. About 5 minutes to go in the third period, you know, they scored the first goal in the third to take the lead again, Buffalo did. And then with about 5 minutes expired, the wheels started coming off. And part of what I saw the wheels come off, without question, was the man standing between the pipes. Logan Thompson let in a couple of really bad goals. Wide open looks, just no excuse for some of the goals to go in. And again, I saw Aiden Hill make some great saves on Thursday night against Boston on the road, a tough place to play, the Garden. But then again, after making a couple of great saves, he let a couple of soft ones in, including the game that ended up, the goal that ended up being the game winner for the Boston Bruins.
Yeah, it's really tough to, for me, as someone who never played the game, to really nitpick goalies. But I think when you watch the play of Logan Thompson and Aiden Hill, the last, I'll say since the All-Star break, inconsistent is probably the best way to describe it. Like, Aiden Hill was phenomenal before the All-Star break on that road trip to New York. Like, he shut down the Islanders. He shut down the Rangers. Logan Thompson wasn't great against New Jersey, took the loss against the Red Wings. And you're thinking, all right, here we go. They come out of the All-Star break. They have Edmonton on this long win streak at home. Aiden Hill plays lights out. And since that game, the inconsistent play of the two of them has been troublesome. But I think it kind of mirrors the inconsistent play of the Golden Knights in general. There's not a lot of good right now. You look at the way, they are unable to play a 60-minute game. Like, the other night it was the first period. 3-minute span or 4-minute span in the first period against the Bruins. They fall down 3-0. In just a short period of time. Last night, Buffalo explodes in the third period.
Well, the first period, they came out and scored a goal in the first 2 minutes of the game.
Yeah. I mean, and that's not the first time that's happened this year. It's happened a couple times where they have given up goals early in multiple periods in a game. Look, for Buffalo, this game means more. It should mean more to Vegas, considering they were so close. I really thought they were going to come out and play a great game last night, because I felt like they had to feel like they had a point stolen from them the other night against Boston. Not saying that there was anything nefarious, but they played well enough in that Bruins game to get a point. And they gave up the late power play goal. They had a 6-on-4 at the end of the game. They came close, didn't put it away. And now you got Columbus tomorrow.
That last goal, though, in Boston, it was such a letdown to play so well, to come get back. When you're down 3-0 to a team like the Bruins on the road early, that is a game that could completely get away from you. And the Golden Knights didn't let
it
get away from
back,
you.
Know,
and then
they're going
to let
them. They fought back a little bit last night, too.
They
and
did.
Then, and then you know, that third period.
You get let down by your goaltender. And, you know, we're not used to that in Las Vegas. We haven't seen a great deal of that. We had a little bit of turmoil after Marc-Andre Fleury departed, and Robin Leonard and what went on there.
Who was never given a fair shake.
I agree 100%. I'm not going to deny that. But then Logan Thompson came in. He started the season so well last year. Everyone thought, wow, we really have something here.
Hey, it was an all-star.
He gets hurt. The afterthought, Adin Hill, who comes in, you know, comes over here as a 27-year-old guy, not old by any means, but a guy that was always, you know, kind of a backup. They said he was a late bloomer at every level, and he has one of the best postseason runs of any goaltender ever. I mean, he just played lights out when he came back in.
Well, I think the thing that you're kind of forgetting in this is they had Laurent Brossoit,
yeah,
who was a seasoned veteran.
They couldn't keep him all, though. That we knew.
No,
that.
No. But the point was, Laurent Brossoit was supposed to be the backup going into the season. He's the backup in Winnipeg.
He's coming off of a season-long ending an injury.
Yeah, I mean, Laurent Brossoit, to me, was the guy who when I looked at, all right, so there's no Robin Leonard last year. I looked at Laurent Brossoit as being the guy who would take the job from Logan Thompson.
Yeah, the heir apparent.
And look, it didn't really materialize that way, but Laurent Brossoit played really well when needed. He was the odd man out. He had to go. And then they had Jonathan Quick,
yeah,
who they traded for. So they had some really good options.
And even Patera, this team was like five goaltenders deep.
Well,
going into the postseason.
The thing is, I don't think they could play like with Patera right now. The team in front of the goalies is playing so bad.
Yeah, you can't blame him.
You're not going to bring Patera in and let him just destroy his confidence because he's going to give up 4 or 5 goals. Like, the problem, Brian, right now is it's the inconsistent play of the goalies, but the problem is they're not playing well enough to steal a game, right? Like, every now and then you hear the phrase, oh, that goalie stood on his head. And a goalie goes out, he just has a night where he has like 44 saves and maybe gives up one goal and the team wins 3-1. The Golden Knights aren't getting that from their goalies.
No, you know, and the thing is, too, you know, you talk about plug and play, and they've had, I mean, their fourth line are all AHL players, but yet Brisson, what's his name, scored a goal the other night, Morelli.
Morelli, yeah.
These guys are playing well. It's not their fault that they're not winning. They're doing their job as a fourth line coming up from the AHL on a moment's notice and really threw them all together, and they're playing decently. Brisson had another goal last night, but again, it's the last line of defense. It's mistakes. That giveaway the one by Shea Theodore where he didn't keep the puck in, that's so uncharacteristic of him. And he just didn't keep the puck in. It got past him and he got smoked. And those kind of things cannot happen. That is fundamental hockey that just has to be. I mean, the bottom line is, a defenseman, you've got to guard the blue line. A puck should never get past you on the boards like that puck got past Shea Theodore. And he's so good that I'm not going to rip on the guy for one bad play. But the point is, you can't have those when you're reeling.
Well, I think a lot of what you have to look at is the blue line. Shea Theodore missed 35 games.
Yeah.
And in his absence, you had a collection of Kaden Korzak, Daniil Mariamanov,
Ben Hutton.
What's his name? Who came in and Lucas Cormier,
yeah.
Ben Hutton. They played 11 defensemen this year, but what's kind of missing from that is, in the absence of Shea Theodore, Alex Pietrangelo and Alec Martinez had to log a lot of minutes. And then I think Nick Hague and Zach Whitecloud have not taken that next step.
No. You know, and that is frustrating. And that's going to be for the next nightcap. We'll, you know, we'll see what happens this week.
But two big games. I mean, look, you have to absolutely win tomorrow in Columbus. I don't care.
No question.
You lose that game to Columbus, especially if Eichel is coming back tomorrow night.
You start wondering about the playoffs.
Well, I think they'll be okay because they have a big enough lead over St. Louis and Calgary where I'm not too concerned about that. But I do worry about the cohesion. Like, it reminds me of 2 years ago where they just lost so many games due to injury. Look, Mark Stone might be out for the rest of the season. That's the rumor. He's, quote, questionable.
Probably at best. Post-season.
Questionable for the playoffs, yeah. according to some insiders. I don't want to sound the alarm, but the trade deadline is Friday.
Yeah.
And if you're George McPhee and Kelly McCrimmon, you've always gone out and made moves at the deadline. It's what they do. But I'm also of the belief that the team has to show you, they have to give you a pulse. Right now, I don't know if this team has a pulse.
Yeah.
Like, bringing Jack Eichel back is great, and that's like acquiring someone at the trade deadline. But Brian, other guys, not named Marchessault and Carlson, have to step up.
No question about it. No question about it. We got the part of that old production line. They are playing well. Carlson got his 21st last night. Marchessault is on pace to definitely get 40 goals this year. As a matter of fact, he's on pace to potentially pass William Carlson, who had the best season for the Golden Knights with 43 goals in the inaugural season. But cumulatively, this team needs to play better. As you mentioned, trade deadline is Friday. I will never question George McPhee or Kelly McCrimmon based on what they have done in the past. They are masters at using the trade deadline and plugging and playing these players. They're going to have to make some moves, and dare I say, they may have to look at a goaltender out there that's available. And I didn't think for sure that's one thing I did not think I would be saying with less than a week to go before the trade deadline. But right now, that is a fact, and we'll see, man. As Chris mentioned, three gigantic games this week. They've got to win in Columbus tomorrow night, and then of course Vancouver coming to town on Thursday and Detroit on Saturday. And here's the thing with those two games: both those teams are a little bit stuck in the mud right now. The Wings have lost their last two games. I think four out of the last 10 games, Vancouver's lost. If there's ever a time to play them, it's right now while they're going backwards and you get them at home. And those are going to. This is a very big telltale week for the Vegas Golden Knights, and we'll see how it pans out. Hey, moving over to UNLV basketball, been wanting to talk about this. You know, I'll tell you what, you know, compared to where this team was when they played against Southern, to where they are now is completely different. I still, last night wasn't a great performance, but they played a really bad San Jose State team, who I think is very well coached. I really like Miles. I think this guy is a very good coach, coaching a young, tough job.
That team has a really good point guard, by the way.
No, they do. Cardenas. Yeah. Cardenas didn't play well last night.
He's a really good point guard.
He is a very good point guard. He'll definitely play in Europe. I don't think he's NBA caliber, but I think the kid will play in Europe. He is solid. And like I said, their coach is solid. The problem is UNLV, this was a team that I thought UNLV would win by 25. They won by 18. At times it didn't look great, but the bottom line is UNLV has now won 9 of 10 games. Since that terrible loss to Air Force, they have won 9 of 10 games. The resume doesn't look as good as it should, even though they've, I think, beaten four teams that were ranked in the top 25 when they played them in Creighton, New Mexico twice, and who else did they beat that was ranked besides that? New Mexico twice, Creighton, and somebody else.
Colorado State.
Yeah, that's right, Spence, at home, the game against Colorado.
Look, they had a game stolen against them, against Utah State.
Correct. But the problem is, even though that Southern loss to me should not be counted anymore, because when the Boone brothers aren't playing and you've got a true 18-year-old kid that should be a senior in high school starting at point guard, you know, he's got to grow a little bit. You didn't have the Boone brothers. That makes a huge difference. Plus, Whaley, no one knew that this guy, maybe the most improved player in the entire Mountain West Conference, Rob Whaley Jr., he's requiring a double team now every time he's down in the low post. This team is formidable. The worst I believe they can finish in the Mountain West Conference right now is fifth. They're tied for third, but still tied for fifth. And actually, right now, if it ended today, they would end with they would get fifth because the other two teams that I believe are in there with them are Boise State. Let me see. I'd have to take a look and see. But anyways, the point is, this week is huge for them. This is the biggest week of the season. It's going to be telltale leading into the conference tournament. This Tuesday night, real tough game. They have San Diego State coming to town. San Diego State ranked 19th in the country. It's funny because they're tied with San Diego State record-wise in the Mountain West. They're behind them because they lost to San Diego State on the road earlier in the season. But to me, San Diego State is still the cream of this conference. I don't see, as much as everyone's talking about the Mountain West Conference, my opinion, I don't see a team getting beyond the Sweet 16 this year. I don't.
Well, they look, I mean, we'll start with the fact that the conference is so competitive that, remember, there was talking about...
does competitive mean good, Chris, or
no,
just
competitive? I'd have to look at the out-of-conference resume of every team and say, all right, look, this team may have 21 wins and 7 losses, but who do they beat in the non-conference? I think the unfortunate thing for the Rebels is they've proven that they can beat everyone in the conference except San Diego State.
Yeah.
And the way it's shaping up, you're going to have to go through them if you want to go dancing.
Every year it seems like you got to go through San Diego State in the Mountain West.
Because you can't rely on Utah State to take them out. You can't rely on Colorado State or New Mexico to beat them. But unfortunately for the Rebels, I think that early season bump really hurt them. And I think what ultimately will do them in will be that loss to Air Force.
Oh, the Air Force loss was putrid.
It's arguably the worst loss in program history.
It 100% is, because they had everyone. And that loss still, when you look at the body of work this team has done this year and where they were at that point in time, that loss makes absolutely no sense. It was at the
Thomas. I mean, the Southern loss was terrible, and but then there's excuses, right? Like, you can say, all right, well, no Boom Brothers,
Air Force,
DJ Thomas.
Yes.
No excuses to get lit up by the Falcons. But is the conference good, to answer your question? I think it's better than most. I don't know if it's good enough to have a team that can compete for a national.
But
you know what?
It's still not a power.
We said the same thing about San Diego State last year. Like, who looked at that team and said, oh, they're going to go play for a national title?
No, Chris, nobody did. And, you know, that's the best thing that could have happened to the Mountain West last year was San Diego State.
It gave them respect.
No question about
it. It gave them legitimacy.
Yeah, this year, they're taught, you know, at the beginning of the season, they were saying there were 4 or 5 teams that could get into the NCAA tournament. The only shoo-ins to me are San Diego State and Utah State right now. But there's Boise, there's Reno, and there's New Mexico, and there's UNLV and Colorado State.
New Mexico is a bubble team.
They could get in. But after the game yesterday, I got a chance to talk to Luis Rodriguez about this year's team, and finally also about Kevin Kruger, who's no question, you know, at least in all the reporters' minds, you haven't really heard Eric Harper say a lot, but in all of the reporters' mind and people out there, Kevin Kruger's on the hot seat this year. This was talking to Luis Rodriguez after the game.
Talking to Luis Rodriguez, your senior man, tell me about this team. 9 of 10 games, UNLV has not done that in a long time.
Just our resilience, you know, our will to win, you know, we all got a common goal, and that's to make the NCAA tournament, and we know those forwards to be but just taking it one day at a time, one game at a time, one practice at a time, just keep getting better, you know, we're pushing each other right now, but we know what's at stake, what's to come, 2 big games coming up before a conference tournament starts, just taking it game by game, practice by practice, day by day.
Talk about the identity of this team. Yeah, you get 18-year-old kid that should be a senior in high school, and it's your starting point guard. You got 5th-year seniors. You get these guys coming in, the Boone brothers, that really are difference makers.
Yes, sir.
What's the identity of this team?
I mean, identity is just for us to be physical and play hard. You know, it could be anybody's game, any night. We got a great point guard in DJ. You know, like you said, a high school, supposed to be a high school senior, playing out of his mind right now, playing really well. The twins bringing their experience, their leadership, their talk. Ross is a big monster down there. You know, Isaiah Patrell come in, provide a spark. DK, everybody, Jackie, Justin Webster, myself, just all trying to impact winning and do what we can.
I was going to say, get yourself in there, the emotional leader of this team, a guy that leads by example, maybe the most athletic player. That slam dunk in the game really lit the crowd up and got it going. But what has changed from the beginning? I know it's the Southern game. I don't even count that because you didn't have the Boone brothers playing. Yep. What has changed from then to now? And especially after that Air Force loss, you guys just seem to put the foot on the gas pedal and you haven't let up.
We just asked ourselves, who do we want to be? What type of team do we want to be? For the guys that are 5th years or last year, how do we want to be remembered? And when you got guys that are bought in and everybody has the same common goal,
you know, you push each other, you elevate. So right now we're just trying to keep pushing each other and keep winning these big games, and hopefully we find ourselves playing more.
Two games left before the Mountain West Conference Tournament, and they're two big games. You got San Diego State, a team that went to the championship game of the NCAA tournament last year. And then, of course, crosstown rival Reno, who you guys came so close to beating there. Now you get a chance for revenge back in their house. But those two games really are a benchmark to look where this team is at right now. How big are these games coming up?
These games are huge, you know. These are games that place us, you know, in the top three of the standings. May we win. So these are big games for tournament seeding and potentially the NCAA tournament. So these are major games.
Last question. I got to ask you about your coach, Kevin Kruger. You know, up and down. Question, will he stay the Rebels coach? Won't he? What's it going to take? What does he mean to you and this team and this program?
I mean, he means everything. He's a player's coach. He gives every guy on our team confidence. We love him. Rebel Nation love him. And, you know, we wouldn't be where we are right now without him. So, I mean, he deserves all the flowers right now for, you know, helping us get to where we're trying to get to. And he just means a lot to us.
Good luck next week, and we'll see you in the Mountain West Conference.
Thank you.
Luis Rodriguez, he is truly one of the catalysts of this UNLV team. He is a fifth-year senior, and, you know, as he goes, this team goes, he's one of the guys they are going to count on if they're going to make any noise in the Mountain West Conference Tournament. And, of course, in these next two games, San Diego State and Reno coming up this week, huge for them. Listen, we're going to move on. UNLV, I think they'll be okay, and I think they'll get the four seed. I really do, which means they don't have to play in a play-in game this year. That's going to bode well for them. I still think they have to make.
Well, it's a lock. They're not in the playoff playing.
No, they're going to be at worst the fifth seed.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I think you know, I think that bodes well for them. But I still, I'm gonna hold what I've said all year about Kevin Kruger.
Look, the best thing would be for San Diego State to finish two or three, and UNLV finishes four or five. This way, if you are going to play them, it's not until the final.
Yeah, true. There, but you know that first round game will probably be New Mexico again, and beating a team three times in one season, we know that in any sport that's really tough. But again, I still feel that they need to go to the, they need to at least make the NIT and win a game for Kevin Kruger to retain his position. Love the guy. Again, nothing personal. We're just we're talking real. Let's move over. A guest on the line. I want to get around the show, and before I bring in Shannon Spake, I do want to say I congratulate last week our winners for the NASCAR tickets. John Tanner went to yesterday's race. He got to see John Hunter Nemechek win the his 10th career race, actually, the Xfinity race yesterday. And, of course, today, Jessica Morton won the tickets for today's Pennzoil 400. Bringing in Shannon Spake now, NFL reporter and NASCAR host for Fox Sports. Appreciate you holding on there, running a couple minutes behind. How you doing, Shannon?
Hi, Brian. How's it going?
Oh, you know, it's a beautiful Sunday in Las Vegas. We've had when I say beautiful, I'm being somewhat facetious because we have had a wind that I've never seen. We have a desert typhoon going on in Las Vegas, although it's calmed down a little bit today. I wouldn't want to get behind the wheel of one of those cars when it's super windy. Shannon, how can that affect the drivers if it's really windy on a track, especially an oval like the LVMS here in Las Vegas?
Yeah, it can really disturb the cars when they're on the racetrack, depending on which way, obviously, the wind is blowing. It's something that the drivers have been talking about all weekend long, you know, sketchy, concerned, worried. And it's just one more thing. You know, those cars can be so disruptive when they're in traffic if they're not handling well. And that's a big thing, too, right? Say your car is handling poorly. Well, you don't necessarily know if it's the environmental things that are causing some of those poor handling issues, or if it's the car itself. So you could dial yourself out, the wind could go away, and then boom, you don't really know what you have. So it's definitely something that the teams have been mentioning. We had this really cool shot a couple of years ago. Cole Pern was trying to take the cover off of Martin Truex Jr.'s car. It was out in Las Vegas, and the cover just came and like completely engulfed him. And this isn't the first time that they've dealt with wind. And they did know all week long, if you looked at the weather forecast, that this was something that they were going to have to deal with. But it's out there. Our cameras on the roof. I feel like I've been told that some of the cameras aren't working because of the high winds that are out there in Las Vegas.
Not surprising me at all. Electricity kept going on and off yesterday in a lot of places, including my house. So we're pretty used to that here. I know a lot of people, you know, exciting NASCAR. It's going to be a very strategic race. When you're dealing with Mother Nature and conditions, that's where strategy comes in, experience and expertise. And, you know, talk about experience and expertise. You know, an interesting lineup today. You know, when you look at the you know where they're lined up, but a guy that you gotta fear is by Byron. I mean, William. Last year, the guy won the race here, won Daytona, and this guy looks like he is, you know, he looks like he's on pace to maybe win. He was in the playoff last year. This year, I think he's on pace to win the series.
Yeah, you know, I sat down with William. He won six races last season. You know, obviously, kicked off the year with the Daytona 500 win. It's really cool story because when you look at what William Byron's done, I mean, he came into the sport. He was an iRacer. He learned how to race on a rig and at home and didn't even have a whole lot of experience there. Right, he started when he was like 14. Didn't climb into a race car until he was about 15. Rick Hendrick takes a chance on him, and not only Rick Hendrick, but he kind of came up through the ranks with Junior Motorsports and some of those things prior. But a lot of people questioned this move, right? Who's Alex Bowman? Who's William Byron? They obviously stepped into two of the most famous cars in NASCAR, the 24 and the 48. And William was, you know, he led the way last year in wins. He won the Daytona 500 the first time that Rick Hendrick did it in 10 years. I do think that both he and Kyle Larson's actually my pick to win today.
I'm not sure what happened. Is that one? Is it, there we go.
Can you hear me now? Sorry.
Well, no, it's okay. I thought it was our weather here happening.
The internet is terrible in here. So, of course, you work at a TV station and the internet is terrible. Joey Logano's been so super fast. I think he's had the car to beat the last 2 weeks and unfortunately has gotten caught up in wrecks both at Daytona and Atlanta. He's on the front row again today. And if he can make it a clean race, I just remember Daytona. I felt like he was in a world of his own. He could just pull away from everybody. I really am excited to see what the Fords can do without getting caught up in a wreck.
Yeah, you know, I agree. And the two guys you mentioned, Joey Logano, Kyle Larson on the first row, really tough. But there you got Byron right in row two behind him. And, you know, a guy like Martin Truex Jr., who has fared well in Las Vegas, he seems to also go well on the ovals. Another guy that I like. But even though he's down on the grid a bit, you know, Kyle Busch, man, he's the points leader right now. This is his home track. And to win this race would mean a great deal to that guy. He's got to come from behind, but nothing he's not used to doing.
Yeah, listen, Kyle wants to win at Vegas more than he wants to win anywhere, except maybe the Daytona 500. You know, grew up at the Bull Ring, racing the Bull Ring. You know, his son has raced there now with Kurt, obviously, as well. This is a huge weekend for him, and he's not afraid to share that. It'll be interesting to see what he could do. Obviously, just his second season at RCR. I know he would love to get in there and get the victory. As far as Martin Truex Jr., great. I mean, Martin for a long period of time was the man on mile and a half. Like, if you went to a mile and a half track, it was Martin Truex Jr.'s day. And since he won the regular season championship last year, he didn't have a great playoffs. So I really feel like, you know, he's a guy that I'd love to see. You'll hear it so much from people in NASCAR. This is the first week that we really get to see what these cars, where these programs are, because the first 2 weeks, you know, they're speedways, they're drafting tracks, they're big wrecks. It's not a great measuring stick of where these programs are. This is the first week, and really when they get back from this West Coast swing, of course, this weekend, Phoenix next weekend, this is when we'll really know what these cars and what these teams have.
No, I agree 100%. And as you mentioned, you got two Fords and two Chevys in the front two rows. But then you've got that Toyotas with, you know, Wallace Jr. and, of course, Truex Jr. in the next two. Like I said, I'm taking Truex Jr. because I agree, in a mile and a half, he's almost unbeatable. And I think he is due. And I think this is a track that could get him on track, no pun intended. I also like Kyle Busch. I don't want to call him a dark horse, but from where he's coming from, it would be a big win to come from there and win. But you know, I'm not going to count out Byron Logano, Kyle Larson, any of those guys. They're so darn good. I think we'll see a really nice race here. And what kind of race do you think? Do you think with the win we'll see a slower race than normal?
No, I think it's number three. I think these guys are. I mean, it's the stages. You know, I know that we've had them for a couple of years, but it really adds an element of you've got to go right now. These guys are not waiting around to the end of the race. And we saw that in Atlanta. Those guys were racing from the drop of the green flag. And I mean, four wide at times, of course, the incredible finish that we saw. No, I don't think that this is ever in a situation where guys are going to go out and have a slower race. I think they're they're gonna go out and do exactly what they need to do to move to the front of the field and to get those stage points because they are so valuable. I mean, I know it's only week three, but you can win, you can make the playoffs or not make the playoffs by a couple of, or obviously advance by a couple of those points. And so I think it's super important. I'm excited to see the race. I love racing at Las Vegas. It's fast. The teams love it. I love the city. It's a race that everybody wants to go to because it's such a fun location. And my goodness, your town has been on display for the last couple months with the Super Bowl there and now us. So it's a lot of fun.
You get to see again Shannon Spake. She is the NFL reporter. You see her all the time on the sidelines, a NASCAR host for Fox Sports. And no question about it, Vegas has embraced racing like it has so many other sports. It's wild. I've been here since 04, and I've watched Vegas morph into this sports mecca all of a sudden. Shannon, before I let you go, I got to ask you, you were in town for the Super Bowl. I know you didn't cover it or go to the game, but you were here for the festivities. How do you think Vegas handled it, and what are you hearing from other colleagues how Vegas handled the Super Bowl and the prospects of Vegas hosting more Super Bowls in the future?
Here's what my observation was from the Super Bowl being out in Las Vegas. Like, I've been to Las Vegas several times, and as you know, there's always so many different groups of people, right? There's conventions, or there's bachelorette parties, or there's, you know, some kind of big business meeting or whatever. I felt like everybody was moving in the same direction that weekend. Everyone was kind of there for the same reason, which made it just this one huge big party. And it was so much fun. I mean, you'd be walking through the casinos, you'd see people that you know from, you know, ESPN, my ESPN days or my basketball days or my this days. It was just so much fun to kind of just be part of this big party. I didn't go to the Super Bowl itself. I went to a Super Bowl party, which was so much fun. But we got to go to some parties during the week, and we went and saw Adele, which was awesome. I saw Green Day perform out there. Obviously, went to lunch with you, Brian, and it was just it was a great time.
No, it was. Getting to see you and Lee was great. A short period of time where we got to have lunch over at our friend Brett Raymer's place. But you know, you did get that. I was so jealous. I almost wanted to go to the parties as opposed to the Super Bowl because, of course, I'm from Detroit and a Lions fan, as you know. And I'm not going to say it was anticlimactic. That was an incredible Super Bowl, an incredible experience. The halftime show was magical. I can listen to Alicia Keys from here to eternity. But but so many festivities, and I was very proud of Las Vegas, especially the biggest event, single-day event they've probably hosted since, well, I want to say F1's huge, but, you know, the All-Star Game in 2007, which was a debacle with all the issues they had. Vegas has come so far since then, and it's becoming a sports mecca. I never would have thought this when I moved here in 2004. It's been really cool. It was great meeting you during the week, and I'm sure we will definitely see you again in the near future. Shannon Spake, again, NFL reporter and NASCAR host. We really appreciate you taking time out this morning. Enjoy the show, and we'll see you in a little while on Fox.
Enjoy the race, Brian. Have fun out there. I'll see you soon.
I'm looking forward to it. I just hope I don't get blown away with the wind. Once again, Shannon Spake, really appreciate her taking the time out to join the show. And it's that time, Spencer.
This. If you don't like the facts, take your ass back to bed. Fact this.
Fact this brought to you by Lifelike Hair Center of Las Vegas. If you are experiencing hair loss or thinning hair and want to learn about the best non-surgical options available, call 702-737-5759 or go to lifelikehair.com and schedule your free consultation today. Fact. Yesterday, an incredible milestone was reached and a blazing record was broken. The milestone was LeBron James being the first NBA player to reach 40,000 points. I said it, 40,000 points. And the record was by University of Texas, I should say, the record was in the time of 4.21 seconds in the 40-yard dash at the NFL Combine yesterday by University of Texas wide receiver Xavier Worthy. This brought two things to my mind. One was the sports milestones and records that will never be broken. I'm going to mention a few of those here in a minute, but shocking to you. And this was the second thing that made me think about was the strength of this year's NFL draft when it comes to wide receivers. Last year, we were talking about quarterbacks. We're talking about quarterbacks again this year. Wide receivers, man, there could be 50 of them going in the first round. We'll talk about that in a second. But I want to start off with the milestone by LeBron James. And will what he's doing ever be broken? Keep in mind, he's still playing, and he's not talking about retirement at all. This is what LeBron James had to say about the milestone.
Records are always meant to be broken. You know, it's, you can never say never of any record. You know, at one point we said that, you know, Big O's triple-double record would never be broken. And Russ did it, and now it looks like, you know, Joker and Luka, they're doing it every night.
I like him being humble. I don't believe him. I don't think he was really being humble and modest. I think he was just saying that because that's the politically correct thing to say. You don't want to toot your own horn. I think he knows like the rest of us. 40,000 is so incredibly tough to beat. I mean, it's going to be really tough for someone to catch this guy, especially since he keeps going and going and going like the Energizer Bunny. And, you know, 40,017 points right now. Put it this way, the next closest to him is retired also, and it was Kareem Abdul-Jabbar at 38,387 points. LeBron James is already well in front of that, and the closest to him still playing now, Kevin Durant, he's done it in few. He's at 28,372 points. LeBron's done what he's done in 1,475 games. It's taken Kevin Durant 1,039 games to get there. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar got to his point total of 38,387 in 1,560 games. It's still unbelievable. I don't know who's going to catch him. I mean, maybe if Luka Doncic plays for 25 years, he might be able to catch LeBron. I just don't know who's going to catch this guy. But when I thought about that, guys, I'm thinking about unreachable records. Like, what is milestones that aren't reaching? How about Jerry Rice? Let's look at the NFL. Jerry Rice has 22,895 receiving yards. The only player in NFL history with 20,000 receiving yards or more. The closest guy to him, check this out, Larry Fitzgerald at 17,492. That's over 5,400 yards less than Jerry Rice. And we all know how good Larry Fitzgerald was and how long he played for. I don't see how anyone surpasses what Jerry Rice has done. Almost 23,000 receiving yards. Unbelievable. The GOAT without question. How about in the NHL here in Vegas? You interested in this one? We all talk about the great one, Wayne Gretzky. We know that goals has been surpassed. But how about this? His career points, 2,857 career points for the great one. The only player ever in NHL history to reach 2,000 career points. Jaromir Jagr is second at 1,921 points. Guys, that is unbelievable. Gretzky has 936 points. That's two careers more than Jaromir Jagr. That is staggering when you think about it. No one will ever beat, in my lifetime or maybe several to come unless they change the game and add more games, will beat Wayne Gretzky's career points total. And then Major League Baseball, here's another great one for you. Nolan Ryan, 5,714 strikeouts, the only player to ever reach 5,000 Ks. And the closest guy to him, Randy Johnson, 4,875 Ks. Okay, that again is over 800 more strikeouts than Randy Johnson. Talk about how good Nolan Ryan was. Are any of those milestones ever going to be reached? I'm going to say emphatically no. I don't think any one of them will ever be reached unless the games change dramatically. Now, can that happen? You look back when all the leagues started back in the 19th century. Yeah, I suppose there are records that can be broken in time depending how the game changes and morphs. But right now, you look at those numbers, staggering to think that Jerry Rice, the only guy over 20,000 receiving yards, Gretzky, the only one over 2,000 career points, Nolan Ryan, the only one with 5,000 strikeouts or more, and then LeBron James now with 40,000 career points. I'll throw one more in there that's not going to be broken. A friend of mine, not the greatest guy in his younger years, but as he's gotten older, he has mellowed and become a better person. He was a hell of a baseball player in the late 60s. I'm talking about Denny McClain, the last player to win 31 games. Now, 31 is not a record, but a milestone. And I don't think the milestone, based on today's games with all the specialists and the way it goes, no one will ever win 30 games again. When Denny McClain leaves this planet, he will be the last ever 30-game winner. All right, guys, moving on. As I mentioned, the other thing that was kind of staggering was wide receivers. And in this year's draft, and Spence, I'll bring you in to talk about it. I know you monitor the draft. You're getting all geeked up for it in April. I look at it a lot. I may even be in Detroit covering the draft this year. We will see. But you talk about Xavier Worthy. 75 receptions, 1,014 yards, not that gaudy, 5 touchdowns. What's gaudy is a 4.21 40-yard dash, the fastest in the history of the NFL Combine. Spencer, that is flat-out flying.
No, that's amazing. And there's been a lot of stock in the draft this year. I think it feels like there's been a little bit more hype than usual. And I think maybe it does have a lot to do with the fact that it is like a quarterback and receiver heavy draft. And those are the exciting positions. There have been years where there's been a lot of good offensive linemen going in the top 10. And while those are the foundations of any good football team, when it comes to like the general interest, like people are going to want to look at receivers. Everyone's looking at their 40 times. I don't necessarily put a lot of stock into it. I think like only 10% of your routes are like full straight line speed. People like to suddenly like change all of their opinions on like who they're going to be drafting based on how fast a guy can run. But, you know, there's more to it than that. But it is, I mean, the fact that this guy did that is unbelievable. And these guys are getting lighter and like more athletic as the years go on. It's just a lighter man's game than it used to be football.
No doubt about it. Texas, another wide receiver that's probably going to go in the latter part of the first round. Adonai Mitchell, this kid's as solid as can be. But other guys that you want to look out for, some names to think about in this one. How about Xavier LeGarrette, another guy that ran a sub 4.5 40, 6 foot, 221 pounds, 71 receptions this past year, 1,255 yards, and 7 TDs in only 12 games on the season. This kid is big. He's strong. He's got really good hands. And I look for him to be about as solid as can be. And he's out of South Carolina. And then the kid out of LSU, another LSU wide receiver, Brian Thomas Benson, 6 foot two, 210 pounds. He also ran a sub 4.5 40 at 4.4 in the 40-yard dash, 68 receptions, 1,177 yards, and 17 touchdowns in 13 games this season. Those are some big names, but again, I believe you're going to see 11 receivers go in the top 50, Spencer. It's only happened one other time in NFL draft history. This might be the deepest wide receiver class in the history of the National Football League draft.
Yeah, and maybe since last year. Last year was also a very successful wide receiver class. I mean, you have two guys at the top that maybe go first overall in like a lot of years where there's not high-end top quarterbacks. You look at, how about LSU, his teammate, Malik Nabbers. I mean, this guy isn't going to go first off the board. That tells you how good Marvin Harrison is. So it's really exciting. I mean, every team needs wide receivers. Like, I can't think of a team that wouldn't want one of these guys on their team. You're getting more into those two receiver kind of like mindsets, these GMs right now. They see what the Bengals did. It got them essentially to a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You get a quarterback, you give them two great weapons. This is the draft to go get that guy. I think you are going to see more trades in the top 15 in this year's draft than I've ever seen in my lifetime, just because of how coveted these assets are, and especially just drawing interest to your franchise. You have Marvin Harrison Jr. on your team. There's going to be people who are going to come just to see him play. That's how exciting he is.
No doubt about it. And I mean, you know, on that post, you know, question, which we'll roll it into the bones, but we're really not talking specifically about the Raiders. It's ironic that Aiden O'Connell and Trey Tucker were at the UNLV basketball last night, and they're cheering for him. And I'm sitting there talking to a couple friends of mine, and the thing, and my son was with me, and we're talking about, will Aiden O'Connell even see another snap in the National Football League? League again. I think he will. He'll definitely be on a roster and play this year. But, you know, or I shouldn't say play, but be on a roster. And I think he'll take more snaps. But I don't think it's any kind of a foregone conclusion that he's going to be the quarterback of the Las Vegas Raiders. But speaking of quarterback, Spencer, and not just the guys taken in the draft, there are some good ones. Obviously, Caleb Williams, the big talk about him. Will the Chicago Bears use their first pick of Caleb Williams? The Bears have the first and ninth overall pick. But Justin Fields has not requested a trade, Spencer. He's not asked for one when usually a guy would when you heard that. And, you know, the question is, you know, the Bears face a big decision. Are the Bears going to move on from Justin Fields, in your opinion, or do you think they give the kid another chance? Because, man, if you keep Justin Fields, you can use that pick on Marvin Harrison Jr., and all of a sudden Justin Fields has a weapon from the same university that he played at, and my goodness, man, that starts to become a scary football team.
Yeah, I don't see a world where the Bears don't take Caleb Williams, and it's unfortunate for them. I think they're not in a bad position, but this isn't the most advantageous first overall pick ever, because everyone knows, well, when you're trying to trade for Justin Fields, at least, okay, well, if you're not going to accept our trade offer, then draft a quarterback and see what that does to your locker room, where you have the first overall pick quarterback and then Justin Fields. That's just not a situation that you can go into like for next season. So I think Justin Fields will be gone for a second or third round pick, when in reality, in most situations, he's valued at around a first round pick, or at least a really high second rounder. So we'll have to see what they do. But the thing is like, the Bears have never had a marquee quarterback. Like, I think in franchise history, at least as long as I can remember, it's always been middle of the road for these guys.
No, you're right. Even their great year, Spencer, the 2 years they've made the Super Bowl, you know, Jim McMahon and Steve Fuller, neither one will ever sniff the Hall of Fame. And then the other time they made the Super Bowl, maybe the worst quarterback to ever start in a Super Bowl for a winning or losing team in Rex Chapman. Defense took them to both those Super Bowls. But the point is, you know, you're right. Neither one of those are game breaking special quarterbacks.
Yeah, Marvin Harrison is going to be good, right? It's not the wrong pick necessarily if you do that, but it looks a lot worse if you trade back. You don't get Marvin Harrison, right? You're not going to be that close to him. He's going to go third or fourth overall. And then Caleb Williams is good. That's just a bad play. Like, you do not want to have like a franchise quarterback slip through your fingers. I like Justin Fields. In fact, if the Raiders traded for him, I wouldn't lose any sleep over it. It's not necessarily what I want them to do, but he's a decent quarterback. But to win in the NFL, at least it seems like most years, if you want to like actually have a chance to win a Super Bowl, you got to have someone closer to the top 10. And Justin Fields is just not a top 10 quarterback, plain and simple to me.
No, I'd agree. He's a tremendous athlete. He really is good in the open field. He runs well. He gets outside the pocket well. Not the most accurate passer. Can't make all four passes, in my opinion, accurately that require you to be an NFL quarterback. And will Justin Fields play in the league? Yeah, he might have another 10-year career. I don't know that he's the answer for the Bears or anyone else, and I agree with you. I think Justin Fields may very well end up an Atlanta Falcon, but that's my opinion. Talk about another guy that could end up being an Atlanta Falcon or maybe even a New England Patriot in Baker Mayfield. He becomes a free agent, Spencer, on March the 13th. What do you think is going to happen with Baker Mayfield? Because Tampa Bay's trying to sign him now. You know, the guy has won two playoff games in his career, played in four. Baker Mayfield has postseason experience, and he seems to be just, you know, a guy that you got to say is kind of a winner.
Yeah, I can't see a world where he doesn't stay with the Tampa Bay Bucs. I mean, the reality situation is this guy, he won them a playoff game. The Bucs are in absolutely no position to get anywhere close to the top tier quarterbacks in this year's draft. Now, they could go for someone like Bo Nix or, you know, whoever else you want to say, like that falls. But that's not a situation you want to be in, because your team, you know, obviously is more designed to win now. It's an older team. You got a lot of really good veterans. Mike Evans is floating around. You don't want to go in the draft trying to sign Mike Evans without a quarterback. He seems to like Baker Mayfield. They have a decent, you know, connection with each other. It seems on the football field, he had another 1,000-yard season. I say you pay Baker Mayfield, you give him a lot of money for like 3 years, and then you go from there. Don't go chasing.
No, I can't disagree with you there. I think Baker Mayfield stays in Tampa Bay. If he goes anywhere, it might be New England, because a lot of ties there. And then the final guy is Kirk Cousins, and I'll close by this. He becomes a free agent March 13th. Had the Achilles injury in late October in Week 8 last week. I think Kirk Cousins, as much as Minnesota wants to sign him, my gut tells me he will be the Atlanta Falcons starting quarterback in 2024. Hey, listen, we're out of time. I want to thank Shannon Spake so much for coming on the show. Of course, NASCAR reporter and host host and NFL analyst. She's great. I want to thank, of course, Spencer and Chris Chapman for taking her on, Brian Feldman. Appreciate also Luis Rodriguez taking time yesterday to talk about the game after the UNLV game. Next week, we'll be previewing March Madness as we get ready for all the conference tournaments. Hopefully, we'll have Kevin Kruger on the show and Vince Papale on, Brian Feldman again. This is Out of Line. We'll see you next Sunday. Bye-bye.